Hello, Internet. It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. For updates on when episodes go live, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Hi, everyone.
Dave.
Hello.
And Tori.
Hello, Internet.
We start every week with good thing, so Craig, do a thing that's good and talk about it.
Yeah, I'll talk about it, all right. This week I have a video game for you guys.
Surprise.
But this one is right up Dave's alley.
I know that alley.
So there was a game I recently got addicted to, which has been in, I guess, I don't know, early access or something for the past couple of years now. But it is called King of Retail. Guys, I don't know.
It might be a little too real for me.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I'm like, on multiple different levels, I'm like, do I really want to go back and run a retail store? And if you look at it, like, there's people who have streamed it, for example. You can look up the YouTuber and Twitch person, Northern Lion. He's actually the one who got me into it. Like, he played it. I'm like, all right, this looks fun. I need to give this a try. So the idea is that you're running a store, a retail store. It can sell a variety of things, but typically it falls into three categories of either clothing, food items, or electronics.
Tell me there's a cameo from Kevin Smith or one of his associates.
The Clerks? Yeah. Well, I didn't see any yet. Anyway, so yeah, you're running a store, you know, stocking the shelves, running the register, doing whatever the heck, talking to people who have questions. Like, it captures that nice retail essence. Now, for those of you who are a little confused, Dave and I have come from a supermarket background. That's how we met. So we are very familiar with the whole retail space. I think Mike is as well. And on the surface, I'm like,
real retail. We worked in a grocery store. I think Mike did actual retail.
It's like, still, we
actually talk to people.
To defend myself, I mean, maybe because I worked on the customer service desk and everything, I had to deal with a variety of customers. Anyway.
Yeah, you hear that, customers? You have to be dealt with.
But so on the surface, it's sort of like, oh, this could be a little tedious, but it is fun. Like, running your store efficiently and being able to expand it by multiple different locations and properties essentially become the king of retail. So you do end up running your own business. You don't start running your own business. You only run stores. So you're just basically a manager for hire in these various locations. But once you save up enough money, you can then invest it in your own company. And that's where it really expands from there, because you get to decide what you want to sell. You hire, I mean, you always get to hire employees, but you actually hire, you know, corporate employees that will help boost your business in general. Very expensive, by the way, to hire these people, so don't do it right away.
Can you trade?
You get to pick different properties, and like I said, you get to expand the properties. You know, it's all, you design it as you want, and guys, it's super addicting. It's just a lot of fun.
Can they make What? This should make it like Pokemon, where like some employees are better at stocking shelves, some are better at talking to customers.
Are.
And you can like, but no, then they should make it so like you can trade them between other players. Like, oh, I got a Stockomon. Can I trade him for your Servo Droid or whatever?
So the workers do have a skill tree. They are skilled in four different areas. It can be they're good at cashiering. They're good at sales, which is when people ask questions and they have to go up and answer those questions. Restocking or marketing. You can assign them to those four things, assuming they've been at least trained in the basic level. But you can sign them off for classes so that way you can unlock more of the skill tree. As they perform the task, they get better at it, and therefore they get skill points essentially for whatever task they're doing. So if you throw them on a cashier, they'll get skill points to being a cashier. And that sort of thing. Of course, they go up in skills, they want more money. So it's a trade-off. Do you want them to be skilled in a lot of things, or just one really good task and only have them focus on it? It's just, there's so much to it. I didn't even know this game existed until this year. But apparently it's been around for a while and it's been steadily improved. I have no idea what their plans are. I just know that it's a lot of fun and I think it's worth the money that it is now. I think it's like $20. I got a lot of hold on. I can actually look on Steam right now and I can see how many hours I got into it. I have put in 35 hours and that's in the past 2 weeks. And
that game sounds highly unrealistic.
To put 35 hours in?
No. As you gain more skills as a retail employee, you get more money.
More money?
What? No. As you gain more skills as a retail employee, everyone else gets fired. The schedule gets dropped down to the absolute bare minimum, and everybody is expected to do 8 jobs.
Okay.
Yeah, the higher your skills get, the less work you put out.
to give you credit there, though, I tend to have my employees only get 1 day off a week. And they are there open till close. You can schedule. You can do like a normal 8-hour thing. You can give them multiple days off. I don't, but their mood seems pretty happy because I must be paying them enough. So, yeah, sure. Dude, it's a lot of fun. If anything, check out like Northern Lion as his playthrough of it just to give you an idea. Like I said, it looks like it is bad. Like, it doesn't look great. The graphics are not great. It has a certain style to it, but the gameplay is a lot of fun.
No, this game sounds like a recurring nightmare. I want no part of it.
You would think that, but it's not.
I do think that.
Running the store is different than just working at the store. You can throw your employees at the customers that annoy you. Like, I'm so tired of dealing with these kind of customers. Just let your employees deal with it and go sit in your office all day. It's great. Do some marketing.
So, Dave, what's
marketing,
your good
by
thing?
The way, is Twitter posts. That's what you do in the game. And you don't actually write anything. You just be like, I want to market to the hipsters, and then you're writing a post to the hipsters.
So, Dave, what's your good thing?
Oh, man. My good thing this week is I have a new nephew named Jacob. And Jacob might be listening right now. Hi, Jacob.
Hey.
Hi, Jacob.
If Jacob's not listening, his dad is probably listening or will listen to this at some point. So, hi, Jacob's dad, XC Penguin, and hi, Jacob.
Hi, you're Jacob's dad, who is now Jacob's dad and not Dave's brother, and has never been XC Penguin.
I've seen pictures of Jacob. Jacob is adorable.
Okay.
And guys, we've talked about this. It's Cross Penguin.
Cross Penguin.
Well, now it's Jacob's dad.
Yes, Jacob's dad.
So, all right, it sounds like Dave's done. So my good thing this week.
I haven't met him yet.
So my good thing this week is still Oxygen not included. I haven't stopped playing it. Holy crap, you guys, it's amazing. Once again, it is a colony simulator in the same basic genre as things like RimWorld, Factorio, Dwarf Fortress. There's like 5 or 6 other games, but those are the big ones. And
well,
yeah.
Factorio is not colony sim.
It is. It's just a focus on, you know, on automation.
Factorio's factory building. Like, Colony Sim, I think of, you cannot directly tell your people what to do. You set tasks, and they get around to it based on their priority. And Factorio, you're building the machines. Okay, I don't need to be pedantic.
You don't? I really thought you needed that.
No, and I'm like, whatever. Let Mike have his thing.
So that's Oxygen not included. Tori, what's your good thing?
Oh, I read an excellent book this week, you guys. It's called Paladin's Grace, and it's the Saint of Steel series, book one, by T. Kingfisher, who is an author I've talked about before when I read her horror book, The Twisted Ones. This is not a horror book. It's a fantasy book, and also it's got romance in it. And it's about a paladin named Steven, and his god died and left these paladins behind. And after the loss of their god, a lot of the paladins and their priests went crazy, but those that survived the event and recovered are just trying to move on with their lives and pick up the pieces of having this hole in their soul where their god used to be. And then there's a mystery that turns up. There's somebody in the city that's going around cutting off heads, and so he's trying to solve this mystery. And meanwhile, he meets this naive, adorable perfumer, and they fall in love, and it's adorable, and I loved it. It was a great book. It was fantastic. T. Kingfisher, everything she does is amazing. Go get it.
Cool.
Okay.
So, Dave, you finished a book this week, right?
And Dave just fell off of the chat.
Did he?
Well, while we wait for him to return, shout outs to Cross Penguin. I mean, Jacob's dad in the chat.
So, Dave, are you back?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
You finished a book this week.
This week we finished a book in the Cosmere.
Bold of you to say we.
Dave, yeah. I have a very important message from Cross Penguin who says, Callie says I love you, Uncle Dave.
I love you too, Callie. Okay. Oh man, I'm all like distracted. Alright, this week we are finishing, or have finished, a few chapters at the end of a book that we finished. It's in the Cosmere. It's by Brandon Sanderson, and it's Words of Radiance, chapters 87 through Le Finito. So let's start with chapter 87, The Riddens. Taravangian thinks Dalinar is suing for peace. That's from the diagram. Yeah, he's like, oh, if Dalinar wants to be a warmonger, that's going to be good. But if Dalinar's trying to get peace, we gotta take him out or something. All right, let's move on to the actual chapter. Nobody, no Seth, Sean.
Nobody, no crime.
The Everstorm is of him. I think Sylphrena is talking about the Everstorm there, and she's like, it's of him. And I don't know if she's talking about the Powerpuff Girls character or somebody else named him. Maybe Odium. I don't know.
No, it's the Powerpuff Girls character.
Powerpuff Girls character? Okay. Every shard blade is a mostly dead spren, except for Seth's blade. I guess it's technically not a shard blade then. It's an honor blade. Okay. So the honor blades aren't mostly dead spren. Just the other ones. Also about Seth's sword, it will make anyone who wields it a Windrunner without having to have a nagging little spren tell you what to do, but you do need to use a lot more Stormlight. So, yeah. I do love Sylphrena, but she's a little naggy. That's okay. Hi, Bridge 4 and Relaine. Never be named Rod in a fight against people who shoot lightning. Oh, no. How could I write that? So, Rod is a former bridgeman who didn't make it out of the fight against the Parshendi, who were shooting lightning at him, and his name's Rod. Wasn't a very good tactical move. Kaladin finally gets to be a Light Eyes, just like he always wanted, and now he can marry What's-Her-Face. And I meant to look up her name, but I forgot.
Oh, the girl he was interested in way back in Way of Kings?
Yeah, he couldn't marry him because he wasn't a Light Eyes, but now he is. His dreams have come true. Everything he always wanted. All right, and that's the end of the first of chapter 87. I think I pretty well covered that. All right, moving on. Stormlight stocks will rise, because they have to use all the Stormlights to power the Oath Gates, of course. Lightweavers make no oaths beyond the first, so, you know, Shallan needs to unlock her power by speaking the first oath, the life before death and all, and yada yada. But Lightweavers don't actually have further oaths, like, I will protect those who make me a peanut butter sandwich or whatever Kaladin says. But the Lightweavers don't do that. They just have the one oath, which I think you've told me that before, and I kind of forgot, and this is probably how you know it, because Pattern has told Shallan that. Where do storms come from? So are storms like, are the high storms, there's the origin of storms off to the east. Is it one storm that keeps going around the world, or is it a new storm that shows up every time a high storm, you know, appears? Is it a fresh one from the origin, or is it actually just going around the planet?
Now, Dave, we talked about this. There's an evil mad scientist at the origin of storms.
Named Stormfather.
Named Stormfather. It's, as far as we know, it's one storm that's constantly circling the planet.
Now it's two storms going in opposite directions.
the high storm is one storm.
Right. That's right. The Everstorm is the other one, yeah. All right, so where do storms come from? Blah, blah. The king seems to have vanished. Oh, yeah, I forgot about this part. This is so good. All right, so they're like, oh, I think it's Navani. She's like, where's my son? And Kaladin's like, don't worry, he's someplace where they'll never think to look for him. So where did Kaladin hide the king? Next scene. Oh, my gosh, that is the best place to hide a king. Come on, Lopin, squeeze that sphere harder. I think King Man is a Mega Man boss, or maybe a Shovel Knight boss. In Herdazia, the Lopin sticks you to wall. Nub. Yeah, so a couple things are happening here. We find that King Elokar is hiding with the Lopin's family, and his mother is like the boss of the abode, and in Herdazia, you do not contradict the lady of the house. So she's like king of the king right now. I think she says someone refers to him as King Man, which is kind of like a Mega Man / Shovel Knight reference, I think. The Lopin's been ever since Lopin has a sphere that he's been like holding onto and trying to squeeze the Stormlight out of ever since Kaladin survived the high storm right when he was strung up. So finally, the Lopin is able to draw in this Stormlight. But the Stormlight immediately goes to starting to heal his lost arm. And he gets like a little itty bitty nub. But that's all the Stormlight he had to heal was just a little itty bitty nub. So yeah, the Stormlight can heal more than mere flesh wounds. And then final scene, Moash feels like a fool. And I wrote in here a note for myself. Is Graves a ghost blood? Is he?
No.
Okay, I wasn't sure, because Graves makes reference to the diagram and Ghostbloods do as well. I guess there are multiple factions that are aware of the diagram and trying to interpret it differently, perhaps, or trying to use it to different ends.
Do we want to get into this
I don't know if we've told you or if this was all in spoiler time, but there's a whole bunch of secret societies up on Roshar. A whole bunch.
Which one was Teft? Was Teft in the Ghostbloods?
Teft was an Invisager.
Invisagers, right. Invisagers. Visage, like face. Or image. Right. So that's another one, I guess. But, well, there aren't any Invisagers anymore. Never mind. Well, there's one. Then you get them all killed or something.
That group of them, sure. Okay, so Graves is an offshoot of the diagram. He believes that the diagram can be interpreted differently than how Taravantian is interpreting it.
Okay.
And he was basically given permission to go and do that. So he did.
Permission by him, the diagram keepers?
Yeah, by the diagram folks.
Okay. So he's like a sub-faction or a...
Something like that.
Okay. All right. Anything else on chapter 87?
I just want to say that the Lopin's mom reminds me so much of my friend Virginia's abuela. So much.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting like a Hispanic vibe from that scene.
However, I mean, in the audiobook,
they eat burritos.
Don't they have like an Australian accent or something?
They do.
That's so good. yeah, but, I think yeah, it should Lopin basically because of this scene, and it does give it that sort of vibe.
Yeah, it should be Hispanic. I'm just now thinking, because chowder, that's a taco.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying.
Okay, that was it.
Also, the name Lopin sounds more Hispanic, but I mean, you can't really go by that, because like Shin sounds like it would be an Asian land, but it's more like Western, and they're like isn't like Shinovar like the white people of Roshar?
Yeah, and the Alethi are like the Asian people.
Yeah.
They have what on earth would be Asian features, and my phone just went off, sorry.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be a direct like one-to-one analog to Earth.
That's
a blend. If we saw these people, we would just think they're a mixture of multiple races.
Yeah. But I mean, that's just Sanderson coming up with fictional people groups and such. But
the Reshi are Jamaican in just about every way. Prove me wrong.
So
I always think of the Azir as kind of Jamaican, but only because of Hermes Conrad from Futurama. They're all
that's right. They're all bureaucrats.
They're probably more like African, but they're all bureaucrats. So I think of Hermes Conrad.
Yeah. So the big feature that is present in everyone but the Shin, is the, I'm going to say it wrong, epiphanic folds. It's essentially what
you were so close.
Like their eyes.
Tori, you want to give us the actual pronunciation on that word?
Might it be epicamphic folds?
Probably.
That was my understanding of it, yeah.
Epidermal folds.
So that's the big thing. So whenever there's any fan art, either they get it right and everyone's like, yeah, this is so good, or they don't give them those kind of eyes and they're like, this is wrong. They have these kind of eyes. And it's like...
A second try. Yeah. Okay.
But that's typically why we say they look Asian, because it's an Asian type of eye.
And black hair and tan skin.
Mm, yeah.
The man who owned the winds bought them from the man who sold the world, David Cobain.
Yes.
All right, here's the epigraph. Jenny sure has changed her number a lot.
Oh my gosh.
So there's a bunch of numbers, you know, that kind of reminded me of the Jenny song. And then we learned that it's a sequence of dates with Jenny. And they were all terrible dates, so she had to keep changing her number because people kept writing songs about them. And she did just sick of people calling her. All right, chapter 88, let's go. Welcome to the Ghost Bloods, Shallan. Adolin is beat up, but still handsome. Memory room. Oh, that silly pattern. Whom will he kill next? Yeah, so we have Shallan. She still thinks Adolin's cute, even though his like face is bleeding. And she goes to this room that's like a memory of the day she killed her mom with Pattern, the shard blade. And
hey, Adolin just makes bruises look like a fashion statement.
He's like, I got this on my last date. My last ex-girlfriend did this to me. All right. Which actually, I guess, like, never mind. I guess you never dated hold on. Don't tell me. Esh and I. He never dated Esh and I. Esh and I wanted to date Dalinar, though. All right. So, you got Shallan. And there's kind of this whole bit about how, like, oh, this is how all of the troubles in our family started when I killed mom with my secret shard blade. And, well, she killed, I think, her mother, and there was a guy who was just, like, a delivery guy or something. But then it turned into this whole, like, oh, her father killed his wife and her lover. And, like, oh, this is where the whole trouble started and where everything went downhill. But, like, I mean, come on, Shallan can only be blamed so much for this. First of all, being a child and it being an accident, presumably. But then, like, her dad was pretty terrible from that point on, and he is very responsible for everything he did. So Shallan shouldn't be too hard on herself for that event. And yeah, so who's Pattern going to kill next? Although Shallan will kill Pattern someday. So we still have this trend of like, oh, the Radiants are going to betray the Spren and kill the Spren, which I'm kind of curious why they still think that they're going to kill the Spren. Like, they're seem like pretty good weapons being alive. Maybe it's because they don't want to hold on to their oaths. So they like make the Spren mostly dead so that they can have a shard blade without an oath. I don't know. Next scene. Amaram and the Sons of Honor. Would that Mercy had not stayed his hand all those months ago when he could have executed that spearman. Yeah, that's like, oh man. Amaram, you're so terrible. The first I was thinking, did Amaran maybe know that Kaladin was a Radiant the entire time, like when he first killed Shallan's brother and got the shard blade and all that? Like, did he know that Kaladin was a Radiant? And then we get this line, would that Mercy had not stayed his hand when he could have executed that spearman. So I guess he did it. He just still thinks of Kaladin as that.
Kaladin wasn't a Radiant yet. Like, he didn't really start bonding with Syl until he was a slave in the...
You didn't tell me he didn't use Radiant powers to kill the Shardbearer?
He did not use Radiant powers to kill the Shardbearer.
Really? At all?
No, he's just super good.
He's really good.
I guess Shallan's brother maybe wasn't that practiced?
That's also true, yes.
Okay.
But mostly Kaladin is just that freaking good.
I don't know whether to like him more or less as a character because of that. I guess it's like, I guess I should like him more because it's like, oh, he doesn't need like this super card wild power ace up his sleeve has Radiant power to be good.
In his character build, he took super good spearmen and had to balance it with a bunch of negatives like crippling depression and super duper classism and self-loathing and poor social skills and yeah.
So one thing about this line is it says all those months ago, so it gives us a time frame where it's like, oh wow, this the entire plot of these two books took place over months, which
it's less than a year. Yeah.
Yes, a month is less than a year. Good job, Craig. Months is less.
I'm agreeing with you, Dave.
Unless it's more than 10 months. There's 10 months in a year on Roshar. But yeah, so it's like, oh wow, there's a lot. Like these entire two books took place in what Amaran refers to as months. And yeah, reading that line just made me so angry and made me continue to hate Amaran. It's like, oh, he's like, maybe sounded like he might redeem himself in this chapter and we'll get his perspective and like his pure motive and him being the hero. Like, nah, he's still pretty awful. It's like, oh, I wish I hadn't been so merciful to that spearman when I killed all of his friends and put him into slavery. Like, oh my gosh, dude. So now the Ghostbloods are trying to kill Amaran, and Amaran goes and he steals Tom, the old Radiant dude, sneaks him out of the asylum. Next scene, Seth wakes up in the Frostlands. Seth recognizes Death, or whatever his name is, the Crescent Scar dude, whose name we learn is Nin, or Nalan, or Nail. I like Nail because that's Ilan's evil twin from Order of the Stick. Skybreakers? Wait, Seth is alive. Oh, no way. That's mother flipping insane. That's
no body, no crime.
Dude, all right. So obviously, I have a new favorite Stormlight character, Nightblood. And we have to talk about this a lot. And final note, wait, Seth is alive. So, all right. I kind of went back. I didn't have my copy of Warbreaker. I mean, it's online, but whatever. I didn't feel like going through the whole of Warbreaker again in the whatever little time I had. So I was looking at my notes at the end of Warbreaker, and I was like, wasn't Nightblood with Vasher at the end of Warbreaker? And he was. It was Vasher and Vivenna were going off together, and Nightblood was with them. And he's like, are you guys flirting or something like that? And so I was like, are there other names that Vasher had that might have sounded kind of like Nin or whatever? And I found in my notes Kalad and Talaxin, which were alternate names for Vasher given in Warbreaker. And those were in my Nightblood summary. I didn't actually exhaustively even look over my notes.
Well, he was also Warbreaker.
He was also Warbreaker?
He was the title character.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
so now, like, maybe he's also this guy. Maybe, like, the Crescent Scar guy. And maybe there's actually some kind of, like, connecting detail that I missed. So I definitely want to get back in and reread Warbreaker before we do Oathbringer. But probably not until then. So we're going to have to shelf this for now and see, like, how did this guy, if this guy is not Vasher, how did he get Nightblood? And, like, what's the time frame? Like, how much time has passed between the ending of Warbreaker and this book? Or does this book take place before Warbreaker? Actually, that's a question. Does this book take place before or after Warbreaker?
This is after. Definitely after Warbreaker.
After Warbreaker. Okay. Is there any mention or word of Brandon on how much time has passed between Warbreaker and this book?
If there is, I don't know it.
Interesting.
We don't have a time gap between Warbreaker and this book, but
okay,
it's at least assumed. We know the rough time difference between Mistborn Era 1 and this book, because it's fairly close based on the letter we have from Sazed.
Letter from Sazed. That sounds kind of familiar. So one of the epigraphs was letter from Sazed.
So we at least have a rough idea of when that is.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know the difference between Warbreaker and Stormlight.
Also,
I'm not done with Warbreaker yet, but go on, Mike.
Yeah. Characters showing up on other worlds isn't necessarily a guide to, like, time frames. Like, it'll give you a guide to, like, the order of things, roughly, but it won't give you time frames, because we do know that there is some way to just sort of, like, not experience time for a while. We don't know exactly how, but we know
that. We saw Hoyt at the wedding in Mistborn Era 2.
Yeah, Hoyd has explicitly been doing that.
I wanted to say it's more than just like a fun cameo. Like, I feel like it's canon, right?
Right. Well, so like Dimmu showing up in Way of Kings doesn't necessarily mean that Way of Kings is set within what would have been his like normal lifetime. Like, it could be significantly further in the future.
Right. It's at some point in the future after Elantris.
After Mistborn.
After Mistborn. I was thinking of Galadon. Also, Elantris, because Galadon is there as well.
Right, but he's an Elantrian, so they can live way longer.
Right. So, what you're saying is, world hoppers can give us an indication of sequence, but not tell us how much time passes between each thing.
Exactly.
Okay.
And said better than I did, so thank you.
And Hoyt is an indication of nothing, because he's everywhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, how about that Nightblood, though?
So in the chat, Fractal Doggo guesses that it's probably 100 years-ish after Warbreaker. His logic is Mistborn Era 1 was 300 years ago, Warbreaker was after that. So I think around 100 years-ish, no more than 200 for sure, he says.
My interpretation of all the Era 1 type books is that they roughly take place at around the same time, give or take, based on which world hoppers we see. With Era 2, Mistborn being 300 years after Era 1. And all we have to go on is like that letter from Zayzed that I mentioned and the world hoppers. That gives us our time constraint.
All right, so there's more chapters.
Well, I want to know more about this Nightblood fella.
We'll get to it, maybe. Dave, chapter 89.
No, what?
Dave?
Might have to ping him in Discord.
Okay, you're back.
Yeah, I'm in a garage, so first of all, it's hot. But okay, so did I mention Shishara and Shishishishisha yet?
No.
You did. Yes, you did.
What?
Not this week.
Not this week, no.
I didn't know. I mentioned Shishishishisha before, but not in connection to Shishara. So Shishara was a friend of Vasher's that Nightblood accidentally killed or purposely killed, I forget. But anyway, Nightblood
so
killed
Shishara. Nightblood.
Huh?
You forget. So does Nightblood. Ha.
Well, yeah.
Dave is Nightblood confirmed.
Yesterday he saw shucks. So yeah, we have like nothing to go on with Dalinar's dead wife, and I've been grasping at straws trying to make some sort of connection and try to guess at what's going on. And I thought like maybe if Nightblood killed Shishara and she was like somehow Dalinar's wife, but like being killed by Nightblood might sever people's memories of her somehow, because it's like a cognitive weapon, I guess, in a way. So yeah, they sound similar, and we know very little about Dalinar's wife, and like that's like the big mystery that I was like really was hoping was addressed a little more in this book and wasn't. And more like further on Nightblood, I remember asking a few episodes back whether Nightblood was a Shardblade or not. And I think you said technically sort of. Is that right?
Yeah.
So
technically sort of is an extremely good way to describe that. Yes.
Yeah, because he's Nightblood, so he's not exactly giving you powers. So he's
He's
not like a Spren, but he's also like a Spren.
Well, he's kind of like, I guess he's like a being of the cognitive realm, sort of, but maybe the physical manifestation of him isn't cognitive like it would be for a Shardblade.
Nightblood was built to be as similar as possible to a Shardblade.
Right, but Nightblood was actually made out of physical material, which I don't assume a Shardblade would be. Maybe
and
like
investiture. Like so and, much investiture.
Lots right, so it's and that's the other thing I was going to touch up on was I remember if somebody is holding Nightblood, then he would quickly drain the breaths out of that person, right?
Yes.
So he's going to basically he's fueled on investiture, and if you run out of investiture, then oops, you kill yourself with Nightblood, right?
Then he eats the little bit of investiture that is the thing that is you.
Yeah. So this actually is a lot similar to Seth's Honor Blade, how they mention it requires a lot of Stormlight to power this Shard Blade without a Spren. So it's like, yeah, it requires a lot of Stormlight, which is a form of investiture. Nightblood similarly required a lot of breaths, which is a form of investiture. So, like, they're going to need a lot of Stormlight to keep Nightblood from killing everybody, I think. That's going to be fun.
And to help Nightblood kill everybody.
And to help him destroy evil.
Yeah, not everybody.
We're destroying evil. Not everybody, right. Just
the evil ones.
Yeah. The brief moment we see Nightblood in this chapter, like, made so many Cosmere connections that it was like it started blowing my mind, and I was thinking about a lot of this stuff, and I just wanted to go over it.
So, just as a reminder, Nightblood destroys evil based on whatever his holder thinks is evil.
Mm.
Because the command destroy evil didn't come with any sort of guide as to what evil actually was. So he has to basically use context clues to figure it out. And the only context he has is whoever's holding it.
But Seth thinks that Seth is evil.
Well, then he would have been... We've seen what people who think they're evil do. Like, they stab themselves eventually.
Did Seth actually pick up Nightblood? I don't think he actually wielded Nightblood.
He picked him up. He did not unsheathe him.
Yeah.
Okay. But he heard the telepath thingy. Okay. All right. Well, that was a lot on chapter 88. Who's ready to move on?
Well, I wanted to mention, when I first read this chapter, like, this was my freakout chapter. I'm reading this, you know, finishing up the book, and then Nightblood just pops up. I get chills, and I'm like, oh my God. Cool. I had to stop reading for a moment. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is actually happening. Nightblood is in the Stormlight Archives, because at the time, Brandon was like, I sort of want to keep my book separate. There's going to be little bits and pieces for my fans to say, hey, these could be the same character sort of thing. But no, this is when things start coming together. Nightblood is here in Stormlight Archives. Oh my gosh.
This was the last chapter that I read before going to bed on whatever night it was, and like, I think I was up for like another half an hour thinking about Nightblood before I was able to go to sleep.
And shout outs to Fel Knight, I think, changed his name again.
Jacob's dad's friend. All right, chapter 89, The Four. Baby Dalinar. Dalinar heads to the roof. Shallan is important. What is Adolin? Adolin runs into Sadeas, who is looking at Aslan fan art. Right, because they're like... He's looking at pictures of what, by the description, sounds like it's like a lion, basically. And Adolin's like, oh, these are just mythological creatures from children's books. So it's basically Aslan fan art. It's like Narnia fan art, right? Why are you like this, Trollolo Sadeas? Well, he ain't like it no more. Oathbringer hides in a planter or something. Yep, so there we go. We got Sadeas, boys. We finally took him down. Adolin just walks up to him and stabs him.
You want to really do to Sadeas?
Yeah, and then we know that Sadeas is dead because Oathbringer materializes since the link is broken between Sadeas and his sword. So, yeah, so we finally somebody in this book dies that was not one of Kaladin's friends. Did anybody in this book actually die? Oh, whatever. Let's just finish.
We literally see Sadeas dead.
Yeah, we see him dead, and we see the Oathbringer spawn. So, like, yeah. Aiden hides Oathbringer in, like, a planter or something.
We got a body, and we got a crime. We're good.
Dave, Rod died. Remember?
Rod was a bridgeman, though, wasn't he?
Remember everybody's best friend, Rod?
But yeah. Bridgemen are all red shirts. Dave and I were discussing this before you guys got here.
Yeah, so being friends with Kaladin gives you a bonus to charisma, but a penalty to plot armor.
See, that's the problem, you guys. Kaladin doesn't appreciate that Bridge 4 are red shirts. He doesn't like that. Don't be mean, guys.
Well, he should have thought of that before he took that awesome Windrunner feat.
He thinks about it all the time.
All right, let's move on. Wonka Vader, Storm Daddy Blade, James Bondsmith, Renarin Truth Watcher, four against a storm full of destruction. Four or five. Wink. And that's the last chapter before the epilogue. Dalinar goes to the roof of the tower in Erythru, and he talks to the Stormfather, and he's like, I'm going to speak him oaths now. So he speaks the oaths, and the Stormfather's like, the words are accepted. So the Stormfather is now Dalinar's Shardblade, and he is a bondsmith. That is the name of his order of the Knights Radiant. And we also learn that Renarin is a Truth Watcher. Renarin is also a Knight Radiant, which, wait, why didn't his sword? Oh, they used the dead shard blade to try to turn on the tower. They didn't use his spren, like his alive spren shard blade, which we haven't met yet. So I do remember there was a note about Renarin not wearing glasses at some point, and I want to say that I actually called out that he might be a Knight Radiant. Like back then at that point, did I do such a thing?
You might have done.
You never formally said it because I know we didn't discuss it.
Okay.
It might have been one of those things where you said it and we were all very carefully keeping our lips sealed and then talked about it in spoiler time, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I'll have to, when that episode is released, when he first appears without glasses, if I even make note of it. So he is cured of nearsightedness and. Oh, that's why. Yeah, so that's why he's acting all creepy when they get to the plateau on the Shattered Plains, because he has this shard blade that's a dead spren, and he's a Knight Radiant, so he hears the screaming in his head from the dead shard blade, right? That's why he's all freaky. Plus, he's Renarin, and so yeah, we don't ever meet his. Maybe we do meet his friend. Did I like see his friend and not notice it before? I wonder. Seems like the kind of thing that might have been snuck in there at some point.
I also wonder.
Okay. All right. So, what's up?
To, I guess, answer this a little better. There was at least one spren doing distractions on the ground during the big 4v1 duel. One of them was definitely Pattern, but Renarin spren also might have been doing that. I'm not 100% sure there.
Yeah, I think there's
like a noise. There's like a weird noise or something, right? Yeah.
Yeah, there is hints that Renar and Spren is trying to do some distraction.
I'm guessing we meet Renar and Spren and Oathbringer. Probably meet him.
So well, I guess you're in the big old refo.
Okay. All right. So Dalinar knows about Dalinar. He knows about Shallan. He knows about Kaladin.
Knows about Dalinar. Does he though?
Yes. I'm listing off the Knights Radiant that Dalinar knows.
But he knows. Okay.
So Dalinar knows about Dalinar and Shallan and Kaladin. He's like, how can the three of us face this monster? And Aaron walks up and he says, four of us. And I'm thinking, five. And let's move on to the epilogue. Art and expectation.
Why the number five? I don't
know. Epilogue. Art and expectation. This obviously being the epilogue of a Stormlight book. It's going to be written from the perspective of Hoid. And he's talking to these like singing crab boys or something. And he's trying to tell them this story. And he's like, expectation is the true soul of art. So like, you don't want to like release your best album as your first album, Boston. Because then, like, anything that comes out after that, people are going to be like, I wasn't as good as the first album. So, like, you know, their expectations are too high. So, something like that. Who's Tanavast?
Tanavast was the former holder of honor.
The former holder of honor. And he bought Wit Drinks once. And that's the end of Stormlight Archive Book 2. Nothing else interesting happens in the epilogue.
What? Nothing?
Nothing. We don't find out anything in the epilogue that we didn't already know, guys. Come on, let's be real.
That is true.
Everyone is hinting at the fact that Yasna shows up and she sees Wit and she's like, not you. That's basically her contribution.
I mean that's epilogue. A common reaction to Wit, pretty much. Oh, yeah. Not you.
It's everyone you. Seems to it's be saying me. That thing.
Right. So yeah, that's yes, Yasna is here and she has to talk to Wit.
And I spoiled it way back when I picked her as my waifu.
Did you? No, you didn't.
Whatever that word is.
You never spoiled it. I never believed she was dead. Like yeah, I did not for a second think that Yasna was dead. I'm not falling for it this time, Brandon.
Okay, so Wit's
like
whole
the other,
speech
like
here
the two
about...
times I thought Marsh was dead.
All right, so Wit's whole speech here about expectation, I think, is Brandon speaking directly to the audience.
Yes, agreed.
Of, hey guys, Brandon here. If you put a lot of expectation on these books, they're not going to be as good as you want them to be. But if you just sort of go in expecting nothing, you'll like them. So there you go. Anything else in this, Dave?
No, I mean, I'm looking forward to the wrap-up, so I'll bring more to the table next week with the wrap-up, and it's going on the hour here, and you guys probably have stuff to talk about.
Also, if you could have a list of everything that we've read so far in the order that you liked it most.
Okay.
Cool, thank you. Which, we just did one of those for the short fiction, so you should have all but Words of Radiance plotted if you still have your notes on that.
Warbreaker up and now. We'll see. All right, bye, buddy.
Bye, Dave. Dave's gone. Play the thing.
This concludes the spoiler-free section of our podcast. If you are, as I am, reading along for the first time, we recommend that you stop listening now, as the following will contain spoilers for not only this book, but for other Cosmere books as well. There may also be general spoilers from any other source material. Spoilers begin now.
Okay, Craig, you have like 8 million things.
I do.
I guess just go.
You guys can go first.
So I guess my biggest thing is regarding Dave saying that Dalinar knows about Dalinar. No, he most certainly does not know about Dalinar.
Yeah, there's a big blind spot regarding Dalinar for Dalinar.
I like that Dave is sort of bringing up things that we're going to find out in Oathbringer. Like, all about Dalinar's past, and we're going to find out all about that, and a little bit about what happened with Shallan. I mentioned it in the spoiler discussion, because we don't actually see why Shallan killed her mom. I don't think that was in this book. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No.
So, Shallan's mom was going to kill Shallan, because she was a budding Proto-Radiant, and I forget who she was working with, but, yeah.
Probably a Skybreaker.
Is that who the quote-unquote lover was? Was he a Skybreaker?
But then
we
how
speculated
did the
about that.
Involved. You know what? The Ghostbloods just know everything, so that's why they got involved. They just know everything.
What were you saying, Tori?
I was trying to say, we did think about that a lot while we were reading Rhythm of War and getting to Shallan's scenes in there, but we didn't get any concrete evidence one way or the other.
Okay. So we are going to see a little bit of that, and of course we have seen in this book Lopin, manifesting his powers. So we do get to see Squires get a little bit of that, which is fun. So Dave is like, he was touching on all these things that we're eventually going to get the answer to.
One thing he didn't touch on that I was so disappointed in is he didn't figure out who Vasher was.
Yeah.
He was so close.
He was so close. I was so sure.
I was waiting for him to be like, yeah, so I went over all the characters that were mentioned, and then I realized, hey, Zaheel was a little strangely mentioned. I wonder if that's Vasher. Nope. Instead,
I was waiting for
Mel.
It.
Nope. I went over all the names.
You, Dave.
I went over all the names that Vasher was known by back in Warbreaker, and I decided that he's Nail. He's a herald who's been alive for longer than Vasher has existed. Clearly, that's the only answer.
Okay, to give him credit, that's actually not a bad guess, though. I mean, it's bad because we know the heralds cannot leave the Rosharian system, just like Odium, but picking a near-immortal cognitive shadow as a return isn't too bad of a guess.
Okay, except, alright, first, we know the returned can look like basically whatever they want, so this is probably a moot point, but yeah. Zyle's physical description matches Vasher's, and Nail's does not.
Plus, he keeps trying to say color things.
Color things!
The most obvious. I didn't get it either until even after Nightblood appeared. I didn't figure it out until Vivenna. So that's why I went with that guess.
In defense of the color things, they aren't in Warbreaker. It's an artifact of auto-translate.
Yep. So we have Six of the Dust, Allomancer Jack, Mistborn Era 2, we have Mistborn's Secret History, and then Oh, and then we have Edge Dancer. So we have a lot to go before we get back to Oathbringer.
You just skipped a bunch of stuff. So Six of the Dusk, Allomancer Jack, Shadows of Self, Bands of Mourning.
Yeah,
so
I said Mistborn Heir too.
That's not all of Mistborn Heir. Ah.
I just grouped them together because we're doing them back to back.
Okay. Shadows of Self, Bands of Mourning, Mistborn Secret History, not White Sand Volume 1.
Correct.
Arcanum Unbounded, so we can talk about the non-story bits, Edge Dancer, and then Oathbringer.
Okay, so we're doing all of the rest of our... So we're doing the Arcanum Unbounded, we're doing all the side stuff.
Yeah, I figure we can do, like, an episode on like, the non-story bits.
A lot to go through before we get back to Oathbringer. Poor Dave.
Yep. But that's okay, because...
you get to learn more about Nail in Edge Dancer.
That's okay, because very soon, he'll be able to read Allomancer Jack.
That's true, yes.
And then I bet Dave is going to love Allomancer Jack.
I'm curious what Dave's reaction is going to be to Mistborn Secret History. I mean, at first, I was actually disappointed that Kelsier... Oh, by the way, spoilers, guys, if you listen this long, Kelsier's still alive. I was a little disappointed at that at first. I'm like, oh, of course, you bring back a favorite character. But then once I reread it, looked into how, you know, the magic system works, I'm okay with Kelsier, you know, being back. I think
still alive isn't quite the right phrasing.
Well, he's
isn't dead. Was dead. Is no longer. Zombie Kelsier.
The survivor.
But Zeth is also not still alive.
Yep. Zeth is also a cognitive shadow whose soul is not quite attached correctly.
But he was also brought back, like, moments after dying, which I think helps.
Yeah.
I would guess that that's going to help with the whole maintaining sanity thing.
Because as far as we know, Kelsier is not using his own body. We don't know which body he's using.
I don't see how he possibly could.
Yeah. Well, we know that Tensoon was carrying around the bones for a bit. Oh, no, or Seer was. No, Tensoon knows where the bones are.
Tensoon had them and used them at the end of Hero of Ages.
But yeah, the flesh is gone. Good point, Sword Nimi. The flesh is gone, it's just bones, and you need more than bones for stapling a cognitive shadow to the physical realm.
Apparently it takes
Which is interesting.
A stake through the eye.
So, side note, Spryn are cognitive entities that start manifesting themselves in the physical realm, and they have to be drawn over... typically through this Nihil bond. Cognitive shadows are cognitive entities that also find a way into the physical realm. There's similarities there.
Well, cognitive shadows.
I'm not going anywhere with this yet, but I just wanted to point out the similarities between Spryn and cognitive shadows.
Cognitive shadows start out as mortal minds. Spryn are
investiture minds.
Yeah, splinters of shards, basically.
Although it is interesting that Spryn have more. They have a better framework of how things work versus Nightblood, who, like you've mentioned before, he has no context for anything because he is metal with a mind.
Right. So the Honor Blades were just sort of made, not based on anything that previously existed, right?
Yes. They were gifted by Honor to the Heralds.
And then
Spryn
modeled themselves after the Honor Blades.
Correct.
Yeah.
I was going to point out that I think we've gotten word that the surges on Ashen are different than the surges that the Radiants have.
I wouldn't be surprised by that.
You'd be surprised if they were different?
I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Oh, okay.
And then Nightblood was built based on Shard Blades. So he's like three steps removed from Honor Blades.
Yeah, I don't think they were trying to mimic an Honor Blade. I think they specifically were trying to mimic Shard Blades. But I think what they were mostly trying to mimic was the cognitive and spiritual cutting aspects that Shard Blades have, which is what Nightblood is really good at.
Yeah.
Destroy evil is such a bad command.
Okay, don't we talk about Adolin killing Sadeas?
Yeah, let's have a little chat.
He did that. It was far less of a plot point in the next book where it should have been a bigger plot point.
Yep.
And I don't think anybody cares these days.
So I wanted to talk to Dave about this. So maybe we'll talk about it in an overview. I'll just briefly mention here. But this goes along with Brandon Sanderson wants to make sure the villains can keep up with the hero team the protagonist. You need a proper villain for your team. And Sadeus has outlived his usefulness. Like, he was useful in Way of Kings and a little bit in Words of Radiance, but now he's sort of powerless and he's just weak. So we can get rid of him, focus on Amaran, and of course focus on Odium for the next book.
And the Unmade. Even more than that, the Unmade.
Mm. So it's always about, you know, stepping up the power level to make things challenging. And we can talk about this in the overview with Dave, because it's not really spoilers to talk about it. But I think that's essentially why, one of the reasons Sadeus was killed. I mean, clearly he was also asking for it from Adolin. So it's Adolin. This is just sort of like natural that it happened. But the fact that Adolin doesn't really face consequences is a big deal. Now, we do get a little bit of it because we have the whole thing where ELA essentially works with Odium, like at the end of Oathbringer. So we do get some repercussions to this. I think if Sadeus was still around, maybe they wouldn't have been as influenced. I don't know. But I think because Sadeus was killed, no one determined who killed him. And ELA basically goes off and joins Odium, sort of. Yes, Dave, or Dave, Mike, nice meme in the spoiler chat.
Yep.
Mike posted an image of Nelson from Simpsons going, ha ha, as Sadeus.
Sadeus to Adolin.
Yep.
Alone in a corridor with no one around. And Adolin is armed.
Like, Sadeus wanted a death wish and he got it.
Like, he was counting a lot on Adolin being a good guy and following good guy rules.
I mean, I still think Adolin is honorable. And one of the discussions in the community is, can Adolin still become a Knight's Radiant when he just goes and kills Sadeus like this? And the thing is, some of the orders, they're fine with this sort of action. Like, it's not necessarily dishonorable. He didn't stab Sadeus in the back. They were fighting directly, and Sadeus lost. So, yeah.
And he hadn't sworn any oaths at that point, so...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we see Dalinar, what he does in his history, and yet he's still the Bondsmith.
Yeah.
But, I think specifically Edge Dancers are called out, like, they're okay with this action.
Yeah, like, set this series 30 years earlier, and Dalinar is the big bad.
Hmm.
Like, easily.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's funny that Sanderson likes to play with that. Like, in any other story, this would be the big bad. In any other story, Kelsier would be a villain, but we didn't have that in the first Mistborn book.
All right, what else you got?
Let's see, we talked about Zeth. Is there anything to mention about Yasna? I don't really think so. This is not a surprise, as they've alluded to.
Tori, you got anything?
Probably the start of their relationship.
I mean, I wasn't surprised.
So Yasna, her thing, given her, shoot, what's her order?
Elskaller.
They can hop into the Cognitive Realm, so she can do that. But you also need a lot of investiture to move between the two realms.
Well, to come back.
And, yeah, to get back, she did not have that. She had to find a different way home.
I would
like to hear her story of her adventures in Cognitive Realm.
I hope that's not what we get when we finally get her book. I hope
agreed.
We get an actual proper backstory.
Stuff in her past that I really want to know about more. She was like locked up or something.
Yeah, like everyone alludes to how she was crazy.
Yeah. Like the only time we see her in the past was when her father was killed. Like, and she's pretty competent there. She's like working with assassins to keep her family safe. And yeah, I don't know. Somehow she went from crazy locked up to fairly competent to super competent.
Why aren't there like 1,000 dudes trying to marry her?
Because they just can't handle all of that.
I don't know that that's relevant. And there certainly should be some sort of subset of them that wouldn't care.
Because they're not good enough for our Yasna.
That's reasons for her to say no. That's not reasons for them not to be pursuing, you know, any of the 100 reasons to marry Yasna.
Well,
at the time that we know her, she's in approaching her 30s or in her 30s. You know, what one would assume that all of that happened when she was younger, like, you know, teens and 20s, and maybe she shut everybody down so hard that nobody else is trying anymore.
No, I think I'm with Mike. That's not good enough. Like, if this is supposed to mimic medieval and Renaissance history, that is not a good enough reason. But if she was crazy town for a bit, And then that's why she didn't get any suitors.
But she's also a self-proclaimed heretic in a very religious society. Right. So that could be part of it, too.
Yeah, that's
sister
what I mean.
Of the king, super rich, most powerful country on the planet. I think
there's going to be people who try. Absolutely.
I think that outweighs literally anything else for at least enough people that this should have been a thing.
Well, I admire y'all's confidence.
No, here's how I think it works. She was crazy, and that maybe she wasn't considered eligible at the time. Once she resolved whatever was happening and became competent, she also became a heretic, which is sort of scary. And I'm sure there were suitors who attempted at the time, and she shut them straight down, like Mike said. Or you said. Someone said.
Tori said.
And now we're at the point where she's older, and everyone knows that, one, she's a heretic, and two, she will shut you down, that they just sort of stop. I mean, I also agree with Mike, though. It seems weird that people would just stop trying, because she should be incredibly eligible, like, even as a status symbol for people who don't understand how Yasna works at all.
Well, we know that how she works is by hiring assassins and by killing people in back alleys. So maybe some of that happened. I don't know.
Okay, let me give you a really solid case for why this should still be happening, which is that Shallan was not the only light-eyed young lady seeking Yasna as, like, to become her ward, or to be warded.
Yeah,
wards.
She had other attempts to have wards.
For the exact same reasons, she should have had suitors.
Maybe she did, though. Maybe we just don't hear about it. Like, maybe someone says, hey, I would like to maybe start, I don't know, whatever their dating word is.
Courtship.
Courting. I would like to start courting you. And then she responds right away with, nope. And then that's it.
Yes, and I could see Yasna doing that and, like, not giving it a second thought at all. Like, it wouldn't even be on her radar as something that deserves mentioning. Like, so unless other characters start talking about it, we're not going to hear about it.
I think it's a big deal that we see Hoid and Yasna together in Rhythm of War. That's sort of like, this is notable that they have struck up a relationship, because Yasna doesn't date. She's not interested in it.
Oh, and to be clear, I'm not at all confused about, like, why she would shut anybody down. I'm on board with that.
Because nobody's good enough for our Yasna.
My confusion is why we don't see, you know, a lot of people trying.
Yeah, I think it's the equivalent of her taking spam junk mail and just throwing in her junk folder. Like, she doesn't think about it. She just auto-responds, nope, and that's it. It's not a big deal. And I'm sure she's practiced enough that she knows how to shut someone down so they stop asking.
By turning them into smoke and or crystal?
Yes. that's why she went after those thieves.
They whistled at me once while I was walking past a construction.
Yeah, Yasna would not take any of that.
All right. Tori, do you have anything else?
No, I don't.
Okay. Craig, do you have one more thing?
I think I'll just wait to the overview.
Okay. Shall we go over, like, all the various secret societies that we know about with Dave next week?
Oh, no, please. Let's save that for the overview.
I think we can finally mention them to Dave, because he's at least have heard. He's heard them. He's heard of them.
We've got four major ones off the top of my head.
Are we counting Team Radiant?
No.
Sons of Honor, Ghostblood.
Diagram.
The Diagram.
And Skybreaker.
And the Invisigers.
They are not a major one.
Yeah, they're not a major really one.
They're secret societies.
If we're going to list all the secret societies on Roshar, we're going to be here for like a 10-hour episode.
Let's not do that.
Let's the four major ones, and then we'll also have Team Radiant eventually. I think that's good enough.
And don't forget your list of things in order of preference.
Rate the thing.
I don't even know where my old rating is. Hooray!
Hooray!
The top whatever books and short stories in the Cosmere so far. You won't believe what number 7 is. Doctors hate him. All right, bye everybody.
Good night, Internet.
Bye.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @CosmereCast or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.